folks, welcome to another episode of The Herd. It's been a little while, but it's good to be back. I'm David Shepard, MLA for Edmonton City Centre, official opposition critic for health and proud new Democrat, joined here today by Kathleen Ganley, my colleague from Calgary Mountain View and our critic for energy and former Minister of Justice. How you doing, Kathleen?
Very well, thanks. Yourself?
I'm doing well. It's good to have you here. Well, let's jump into this. So we were in an interesting position this past weekend. We earned, anonymous honor as Alberta became home to the highest per capita COVID case count in North America. So that means we're not only in Canada, but ahead of every other state in the U.S. Now, in my view, we didn't have to be here. You know, this traces back to, I think the COVID variants have been a big driver of this. Back on January 25th, we first heard about COVID variants arriving in Alberta. So that was from international travel. Started to spread in the community pretty quickly after that. So from there, we saw, I think, COVID case numbers came down a bit in February, but started to tick up again after Jason Kenney announced his reopening strategy. You remember that coming in February, the reopening strategy?
I do.
Excellent. So, and what we also know is that the R value, then that's how fast the virus is reproducing and infecting other people in the community. So this past weekend here in Alberta, we hit a point where we became the worst jurisdiction in North America for per capita COVID case rates, for new case rates. So that means ahead of every province in Canada, ahead of every state in the U.S., we have more COVID happening per day. So this is an incredibly concerning situation. I don't think we got here, though, out of the blue. So I just want to take a second and track back to where this started. So back in January, we know that we saw the first arrival of the COVID-19 variants. So, of course, the variants are the ones that are far more infectious, that are sort of mutations of the original COVID-19 virus. January 25th, we heard about the first cases of those in Alberta. Within days, we saw it beginning to spread in the community. Now, I recall at that time, Kathleen, we heard from medical experts who were expressing a lot of concerns about what those variants could do. Were you hearing that as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think those concerns were well placed. You know, we had evidence internationally to demonstrate that that was exactly exactly the right call, that they would potentially spread a lot faster.
Indeed. And we got to remember, in January, we were just recovering from that second wave. So, of course, what we saw in the second wave, Jason Kenney, again, dragged his feet, waited until case counts were through the roof. Our healthcare system was under enormous pressure to the point where it could have begun to collapse before he took any significant action. And, you know, he took a lot of half measures and then finally in early December took some serious actions. Those lasted into January, of course, while he and his, well, not he, but some of his folks in his caucus, minister and some others, took their tropical vacations. We came into January recovering from that. So then we had the variants come in, and in February, all of a sudden, Jason Kenney decided that he wanted to start to reopen the economy because we saw hospital rates coming down. So there were less people in hospital and the other triggers. So he announced his new reopening plan. Now, I remember that first week he announced the reopening plan, and when we reached that first trigger point for that first step, he said, you know what, hospitalizations are down, but we're not quite there yet. So we had a partial shift. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember. Yeah, I remember those steps and thinking, you know, I mean, it's good to set up trigger points. I don't disagree with that. I actually think the people of Alberta would have been a lot better off had Jason Kenney done more sort of providing of modeling and that sort of thing, so people knew where we were going and what those trigger points were. But I also think that, I mean, probably one of the first rules of setting good policy is that when the facts change, you need to change with them. And I think those variants were a change in facts.
Absolutely. And what we saw was, you know, as Jason Kenney began to open up, we saw that a lot of this seemed to be more politically motivated than motivated, as you said, by the facts and by the data. Because when we saw UCP MLAs get upset and that at one of the steps he didn't go quite as far as he had promised because, again, he was concerned about the numbers he was seeing, all of a sudden the next week he changed that. And so all of a sudden we saw that shift again to sort of keep his MLAs happy. So anyways, we went into March. We saw the variants were continuing to grow. We saw the R value. That's how fast the virus is reproducing in the community. So how infectious it is, how many people are catching it, that kept going up all through the month of March. But we continued to have sort of a refusal on Jason Kenney's part to take any action. I remember the big focus then was on vaccinations. So they were talking about, you know, if we get more people vaccinated, that's going to solve our problem. That's going to fix things. But we came into early April, and I think those numbers were still going up. We still saw variant spread. Hospitalizations were beginning to climb a bit. And medical experts were calling that we needed to take some serious looks at things and take a step back. Jason Kenney, in early April, he made a promise that we were going to have the best summer ever. Do you remember that?
I remember that. And I think the thing that's most frustrating about it is if we had acted quickly to contain the variants, that might have been true. But it's really ultimately Jason Kenney and the UCP and their decisions that has made it the case that that won't be true.
Absolutely. So we had competing narratives going on. We were hearing from medical experts and other folks. We were hearing from doctors in hospitals saying, hey, it's starting to fill up in here. We had the numbers that we could see, the numbers, of course, that Jason Kenney didn't want to share. We didn't know exactly, but we had some data that indicated a problem was building. But Jason Kenney was insisting that, no, everything is fine. We're going to vaccinate. We're going to have the stampede. We're going to have the best summer ever. But that started to fall apart because even the small public health measures that we had in place, of course, we had 17 UCP MLAs suddenly come out and undermine those public health measures. You remember the letter came out, 17 of them signed on, said no more public health measures.
Yeah, I remember that. It was very, very frustrating. And I think suggesting that it's okay for leaders to say things that are sort of just flatly against the fact under the guise of free speech is a pretty gross misunderstanding of the responsibilities that come with rights.
Absolutely. So I know we were talking about that a lot at the legislature, putting a lot of heat on the UCP. We saw the media that were putting a lot of pressure on the premier over this because, of course, we had Angela Pitt, one of the UCP MLA's deputy speaker, who had signed on the letter and was even questioning, well, at least approving that it's saying it's okay to question vaccines, you know, get one, maybe not, do your own research. So feeding into some of that vaccine hesitancy. So at the same time, again, we had those building numbers. COVID, the variants growing. The variants became dominant. They took over as the main strain in early April. Those numbers are climbing. Hospitalizations are climbing. So I know we were holding them to that in the legislature, especially coming up to this past weekend when we saw those numbers spike. We saw record case numbers for 4 out of 6 days. So we knew it was getting serious and we knew this was going to be an intense week. So what happened then on Sunday?
On Sunday, we were surprised by the announcement that the government didn't want to return to the legislature. Now, certainly they have cited growing case numbers, although I feel like that explanation is pretty transparently contradicted by the facts, right? There were a lot of other steps that ought to have been taken in advance of shutting down the legislature. There were a lot of things that were more dangerous than going into the legislature. So honestly, I suspect, I don't even know whether Jason Kenney is hiding from us or from his own caucus, but he definitely doesn't want to go back in there.
Indeed. And you're right. This was a very sharp U-turn. Because you got to remember, it was just on last Thursday that Jason Kenney stood in front of reporters and said, well, public health restrictions, well, you know, you can't even really say those are directly correlated to bringing case numbers down. So, you know, still downplaying how important those are in this process. Then all of a sudden Friday, as the numbers go up, he's like, well, maybe we'll consider some. And then all of a sudden on Sunday, oh, it's far too dangerous for us even to actually meet in the legislature. And we got to remember, when we found out on a Sunday, every teacher in Alberta was still expected to go back into their classroom on Monday morning. So was folks working in meatpacking plants. Servers were still expected to go out and navigate their way through patios full of people that aren't wearing masks. So the premier had taken no action in any real sense to indicate that he considered these COVID-19 variants to be a real threat for the province of Alberta, but he was shutting down the provincial legislature because it was too much of a threat.
Yeah, no, I think I think it's pretty clear that what he didn't want was the threat of us drawing his record to his own attention, especially as cases are spiking, right? Like, it's, I think, pretty clear now, looking at international jurisdictions, that had he acted effectively and swiftly when we saw those variants taking over, that we could have bent the curve significantly. And in fact, you see that in literally every other jurisdiction in Canada and in the US as well, that, you know, taking steps, while at least in the Canadian jurisdiction, sort of taking additional steps has helped. Now, certainly the premier has come out and said, oh, well, they have similar restrictions. I mean, the devil is always in the details, right? Similar restrictions is not the same. But, you know, he said they have similar restrictions. But what they don't have in common with Alberta is leaders who have consistently minimized the impact of this pandemic. And, you know, Jason Kenney will tell you that his words don't matter, but they do. A majority of the people of Alberta voted for him in government. People care what he has to say. He is our premier, whether we like it or not. And so when he comes out and says, oh, well, restrictions don't really work, and it's more like the flu, and, you know, all of these other things, it gives people a false sense of security, and it makes them act in a way that doesn't take the virus seriously.
Absolutely. And I think that's what we have to recognize, is that Jason Kenney sort of set up an almost impossible scenario to deal with the third wave. He didn't believe in public health restrictions, so he didn't want to take any steps. So he wanted to depend again, I guess, on personal responsibility, which we saw fail spectacularly in the second wave. He wanted to be able to continue, as you said, sort of spreading that misinformation, sort of keeping that far right side of his base, those folks that think COVID is a hoax and, you know, want to use the idea of their personal freedoms as an excuse not to do it, not to follow the public health restrictions, and sort of be part of that greater public working together to try to end this virus. He wanted to be able to allow his own MLAs to be able to undermine that. And he just created this situation where we have this, unfortunately, somewhat of a toxic atmosphere with, well, that was one of the other things we didn't talk about, is we had a massive rodeo this past weekend. 2,000 people together, unmasked, in close quarters, breaking every single public health restriction, and absolutely no enforcement whatsoever.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge concern. Certainly, it's a concern that's been building amongst Albertans as we see more and more information coming out that, you know, these public health restrictions aren't maybe being pursued. And we have, you know, the premier and the minister of justice saying, you know, we never issued a direction not to enforce the fines. But meanwhile, we have the director of law enforcement, you know, in a public accounts committee saying the opposite, right? That they had, in fact, asked law enforcement not to give out too many of these tickets. So
yeah, let's talk about that.
So problematic.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because we saw that on the weekend. So we came out on Monday and said there is a real problem here with enforcement. We can't allow this simply to continue. We've seen AHS, you know, paying the court costs for restaurants that they had given tickets to. We saw tickets being dismissed in court. We saw, you know, this continuous flouting of the rules at places like the Whistle Stop Cafe, and then culminating in this 2,000 person rodeo. So we call for some specific things, tripling the current fines. So let's say, okay, the current fines aren't enough, let's make them bigger. Specific fine for any individuals that obstruct the enforcement of public health orders. So, yeah, of course, we've had videos of Arthur Pavlovsky from Street Church and others in going into grocery stores and other spaces and harassing clerks and basically causing a scene and, you know, basically just walking away, getting away with it. So sort of saying we should have a fine in place for people that are creating those sorts of dangerous situations. And then looking at taking some additional steps, so maybe you could explain this last part, taking the fines that are currently under the Public Health Act and moving them to the administrative penalty process. How would that help?
So the administrative penalty process was initially set up. This was a government bill 21, I believe, that went through. And the idea was to have a sort of faster, simpler method of adjudication. Now, at the time when that came in, you could tell in the legislation that it's possible for them to designate what they call an enactment in the legislation. So that's basically any provincial law. And so they have, in fact, there is already a regulation that designates the Traffic Safety Act. And so what that means is that people who get a traffic ticket could go to this alternate means, which is actually good for them in some ways. They don't have to take the day off work. You get a sort of written or a telephone or a Zoom hearing that takes half an hour. And so it's just meant to be a much faster process that doesn't sort of get backed up with the courts. And they can designate any enactment. So there's no reason they couldn't designate provincial health laws to go through that process. Because if it really is the case, which is, I mean, certainly the information that has been shared publicly, if it really is the case that the problem is that there's not enough court time to deal with these tickets, we need to do something about that. And whether it's that or whether it's something else that we do, you know, I think we're in a very dangerous situation here in Alberta. If you let people, and people who are, have demonstrated an inclination to thumb their noses at laws already, if you let those people know that you have no intention of enforcing your laws ever, you know, it just invites them to continue and to escalate their behavior. And I think we're seeing that in Alberta, that not only are people continuing this behavior, but they're escalating. We're seeing rodeos and rallies and marches and all of these sorts of
things.
Grace
Life Church.
And yeah, Grace Life Church, all sorts of these things. And the more you get, I guess any law is reliant on the vast majority of people complying with it because it's the law. You know, you can never 100% enforce a law. If you have no public support for a law and you have to do it 100% by enforcement, we just don't have enough enforcement to make that happen. So you have to rely on the vast majority of people to follow those laws because they are the laws. And when you have MLAs and the premier and lawmakers sort of minimizing the importance of those laws, that doesn't encourage people to follow them. And then when you have information trickling out that there's no enforcement of those laws, that doesn't encourage people to follow them. And so you sort of get this escalating situation. And the challenge is, and I mean, we've seen this in other jurisdictions, when you get these huge marches and rallies, it becomes incredibly challenging to enforce because you have to send in sort of a massive police presence and you have to have them heavily armed. And what happens is people get hurt, right? And that's exactly the scenario we don't want. Yes, it's bad that people are attending these rallies, but I don't think that means that they deserve to be injured. And I do think the police continue to bear a responsibility to minimize the chance of that. So I think that this failure to enforce and this constant minimizing of laws is creating a really dangerous situation here in Alberta.
So what I hear you saying, Kathleen, is much like the COVID-19 itself and the variants, if you take action early, you stop at things from snowballing to a point where you have a crisis on your hands. And unfortunately, we've seen that the premier has not taken either side of this seriously. And again, as you said, we've seen that from the minimizing language he's used talking about COVID-19 over the entire year, calling it an influenza, saying only really old people or really sick people need to worry. Maybe homeless people are immune. Children don't spread it, et cetera, et cetera. And at the same time, talking about these rallies and sort of saying, well, these are just freedom-loving Albertans. You know, we just really want to make sure we respect people's charter rights, and echoing the language to the point where, you know, the pastor from Grace Life Church in court on violating the public health measures is quoting the premier as his justification for not taking COVID-19 seriously. So you're right. That all added up and sort of has come to a head again in these last few days. So the premier's taken the legislature away from us, trying to take away that opportunity for us to do our work and hold them to account. He made his announcement on Monday, which was essentially, I want to announce today that I'm going to make an announcement tomorrow. And we saw the media hold him to account on that. And I think it was a bit of an embarrassing situation for him. So, of course, then when he went to make his, when we found out Tuesday afternoon about 2:00, he was going to make an announcement at 6:00. There was no media allowed there, interestingly enough, until the next morning. But if we back up Tuesday morning, you were talking about one of the other tools we got. We couldn't be in the legislature, but we had the Public Accounts Committee, and we found out some really interesting information about the enforcement piece there. What did we find out?
Yeah. So at the Public Accounts Committee, the director of law enforcement, who's an employee of the department, was in there, and he had indicated that, I can't remember the direct quote off the top of my head, but essentially that they didn't want the carts to sort of be experiencing too many of these tickets. I think it was initially the chief of the Calgary Police who had said, you know, or our partners at the province asked us to do this. And then we saw public accounts, you know, officials saying, yeah, you know, that's the case. We don't want too many of these things in the courts. And that's extremely problematic. And then we see, you know, when the press conference does go, we see both the Minister of Justice and the Premier denying that that ever happened, saying that, you know, they didn't ask for lax enforcement. So, yeah, it's a very interesting situation we find ourselves in. And I think people have a right to be confused about what it is that's going on.
Indeed. And, I saw the Minister of Justice, Casey Matter, using some very careful language at that press conference, saying, you know, neither he or anyone in his office had given instructions. Now, that leaves a whole lot of other people within the Department of Justice that could potentially have done so, that were not the minister or the people directly in his office. But I think, yeah, we're going to continue to see a lot of questions about that, given a lot of the contradictory information that's coming out. But let's go back Tuesday night. Jason Kenney appears at 6 o'clock, and he announces some sweeping new public health restrictions. Now, again, this is less than a week after he had declared that public health restrictions don't necessarily correlate with lowering case counts. But suddenly, you know, Premier Kenney has become very serious about the situation. So we saw some measures announced, things like that we would be closing all K-12 schools across the province, that we would be restaurants and pubs, and everyone would no longer be able to have patio service. They could only do takeout only. We saw some real restrictions for places of worship, restrictions for retail business, pretty close to where we were when we first brought in restrictions under the first wave. But there was a lot of questions with that too. What was running through your mind when you saw that announcement on Tuesday?
Yeah, well, I think there were a lot of things that were unclear. I mean, I immediately started to get questions about, okay, they've closed elementary schools, as childcare closed. As it turns out, no, but it wasn't it wasn't mentioned, so that left a certain amount of uncertainty. We see sort of the public health guidelines around outdoor gatherings have shrunk. I mean, I'm glad to see that the province is finally taking these steps. I think it's worth saying, like, yes, it was really important to come and take these steps, but we ought to have done it 3 weeks earlier, right? That's the problem, is the longer you wait to intervene, because of the logarithmic nature of the curve, the longer you wait to intervene, the more you're going to have to crack down. And the longer it's going to take for those measures to have the impact that you want them to. So essentially, we wind up with harsher measures for longer because we waited to act. So that is problematic. And add to that the fact that, you know, less than a week before, it's like, oh, we really have to do this. We're all in this together. We really have to, you know, follow the rules. You have a premier saying that the rules may not work. And so, you know, when people are tired, they've been in this for a long time, and that can add stress, and that can leave people in the place where they're not always making the best decisions. And so when you take those people who are under stress, who may not be making the best decisions, and you know, you say to them, restrictions don't work, and then you impose restrictions that will have a real cost for their lives, you know, I feel like you shouldn't be that surprised when people don't do a really good job of following the rules.
Indeed. And that's been a problem throughout this pandemic. Through when we came out of the first wave, the rules that the government put out were confusing, were vague. The guidelines were very vague. I can't tell you how many questions we had to deal with through my office as the health critic and trying to support our local businesses, trying to navigate that. We had that again through the second wave where, you know, it seems decisions that were inconsistent, that seemed contradictory. trajectory did not make sense, being made at the last minute. And we had that same thing here again. I mean, we have to remember the premier had just in weeks previous just been saying, no, we will not do a lockdown, as it's his favorite word. So we're not going to shut things down. You know, we want business to be able to continue. This is going to be the best summer, rather. So we have all these folks making investments, trying to make plans, and so many other people living in uncertainty, as we see, you know, schools having to go online because they're running out of teachers and staff due to COVID outbreaks, but the Minister of Education insisting schools are safe. There is no problem there. Then suddenly this week, we have this whiplash of a U-turn from the UCP, and it's everything is serious and stop the spike. So it's, you know, again, I'm with you. I'm really glad that they have made these decisions, because these are decisions people have been calling for. Our public healthcare system was being overwhelmed. I feel so badly for all of our healthcare workers who've been enduring this. But for the rest of the public, they're getting a very confusing set of messages here that is doing a lot more harm than if we would have just made some better decisions a lot earlier on.
I absolutely agree. And I think adding to that, you know, even from an economic perspective, if I'm a small business, say I'm running a restaurant, I feel like being limited to takeout for a month and getting the necessary financial support to pay my rent and continue to pay my employees through that month is probably going to leave me in a lot better position than these sort of wavering restrictions that wind up lasting for longer. Even if you're a retail business and you're down to 10%, you know, that's, you're doing a lot less business. You're potentially having to take a lot of measures. You're having to have your employees deal with people that are coming in, not following the rules, and they're having to enforce those rules. So yes, I think it was all necessary steps that were taken, but I also think that maybe taking those steps earlier rather than sort of taking this, oh, well, the facts have forced me into a corner perspective, taking some leadership would have been a lot better.
Indeed. And so now we find ourselves in the situation where it looks like, I imagine, you know, a lot of these recommendations had probably been on the table for a couple of weeks at least. I'm sure that Dr. Dina Hinshaw has been recommending these things, and it's been, you know, Jason Kenney and his cabinet have been resistant. But they're finally suddenly bringing them through. But what we did not hear was any new support for individuals, families, businesses, schools. Nothing else on the table, when we know this is going to have incredible impacts for all of those groups. And one of the biggest things that I know we have been talking about and that we've been calling for is paid sick leave. Because the fact is, if we want to stop the spread in the community, then anybody who has symptoms needs to be able to stay home until they have had their test or until the, you know, their symptoms have cleared up under the rules. But for so many people, if they wake up in the morning, they've got a sniffle, a sore throat, and a cough, they have to sit down and go, can I afford to miss a paycheck today? Am I going to just take the risk? Now, I'll get a test after work, but I really got to go in today because otherwise I don't know how I make rent. That drives community spread. And it's a very simple thing the government could have taken. Very simple. They could have taken it early on. Maybe that would have helped slow this down. But there was nothing on the table to support individuals with these new public health restrictions.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that is a huge concern, because if you set up the system to encourage people to make bad decisions, you can't be surprised when that happens. I mean, it's all well and good to say individual responsibility, but, you know, say I'm a frontline worker who's still being exposed to things. I work in a grocery store. You know, maybe this is the third or fourth time I've had to stay home and get a test and take several days off work because I've caught a cold. That's at a certain point, you know, you're really putting that person in a challenging position that doesn't invite good decision making, because maybe they've isolated several times before, maybe they've lost that income, and maybe they're now in a position where they really are making the choice between, you know, rent and groceries and self-isolating. And so that support can keep people at home. And yes, it definitely costs money. But again, had we intervened on time, it would have cost less money. And I think honestly, if you really weigh the cost of those sorts of supports against the cost to our healthcare system currently, you know, I think that math is more complicated than people suggest it is, because, you know, we really are at that crisis point. We are working our doctors and nurses really, really hard, and people are burning out, and that means more overtime for other people. There's a toll on the mental health. I just think there were some much better ways to do this, and providing adequate supports to people so they can self-isolate is definitely one of those ways.
Indeed. It just seems to me Jason Kenney wanted so badly just to deny the reality of the pandemic, to deny the reality of COVID-19. He didn't want it to derail his economic plans. He didn't want to have to deal with the political fallout and the pressures he was under. So he tried to pretend that the threat didn't exist until finally it got big enough that he couldn't ignore it anymore. And you're right, then that comes at enormous cost. I mean, how much does it cost to keep somebody in an ICU bed? A whole lot more than if we had paid that person to be able to stay home when they had symptoms, or the person at their workplace who came in with the infection. We in the cost, like we said, to businesses, to individuals. Of course, with the shutdown of schools now, we have many, many parents, you can relate to this, who are scrambling to figure out, you know, their childcare responsibilities and how they're going to deal with those situations now that they have their kids at home. So many more people whose personal income is going to be impacted, which means they will spend less in their community, which is going to mean another hit for our economy. So it's really an incredible mess that the government has created just due to an utter lack of leadership.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it feels like COVID-19 is something they can't be held responsible for. Those were sort of facts outside of their control. But the way they have responded to it is definitely something they can be held responsible for. And I think it's clear that the response has been inadequate.
So we are in the process now, I guess, of figuring out how we are going to deal with things now over the next few weeks. So we have made a few specific calls for things we want to see. So, of course, we are calling for that paid sick leave. We are calling for those supports for individuals. But we're also calling for some specific supports for businesses. Now, we talked a little bit about restaurants, bars, folks that have invested in patios and all that, based on the premier's promise that things were going to be fine. We're going to have the best summer ever. I am not going to take steps to shut these businesses down. I know right here in my constituency, I have a number of businesses who made those investments. And I know Calgary downtown has been getting a lot of attention, and you've got a little bit of a piece of that. I know you've got a lot of businesses that are effective. Let me tell you, Edmonton's downtown has been facing challenges too. And we were just starting to see businesses, the Downtown Business Association, other folks coming in, investing in these outdoor activities to try to get some life back on the streets and support these businesses. And now, because Jason Kenney dragged his feet and he dropped the ball, they're all having to shut down again. So we had a press conference down in Calgary just today with Joe Cece and Darren Billis, our critic on economic affairs, calling for some supports for these businesses, specifically for the businesses that invested in patios. So as I recall, we're asking for them to get reimbursed up to 75% of the cost for their patio renovations, up to $10,000. We're asking for access to a open grant up to $25,000 with accessible criteria. Because one of the things we've seen is all these programs we keep getting from Jason Kenney and the UCP, they keep setting up all these criteria and things that are seem designed to screen more people out so that as few as people as possible can actually qualify, that don't actually provide the supports that people need.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So it has been incredibly challenging. Businesses are sort of barely hanging on. And then to tell people they're essentially going to be able to have these patios all summer, and then to do nothing to make sure that that's the case. So to do nothing to stem the sort of increase. And then in the end, they had to be shut down. Like, I think that's the government told them that was a good idea for them to build those patios. And so now I think the government has an obligation to help out those businesses that were sort of caught in the lurch there. I do think it was the right decision to shut down those patios. I absolutely do. But I think it's challenging for the businesses who invested in those on the understanding that they were going to get to use them. And I think, yeah, more generally, the supports available for small businesses, much like the supports available from this government early on in the pandemic for individuals, it honestly seems like it's just red tape after red tape after red tape. And it's sort of like, it's sort of like when you go into a store to buy something and they're like, oh, it's only this much, but you have to fill out that rebate and send it in, right? You know, like a large percentage of the people just won't fill out the rebate and won't send it in. So you wind up in this very awkward situation where, you know, the government's able to say, oh, we've provided all these supports, but really most people can't access them or they can't access them easily. And I think that that's very problematic.
Absolutely. And it's just been part of a pattern with Jason Kenney and the UCP, I think, throughout the pandemic, is they just keep trying to download responsibility. You know, I've heard people say that people that don't like government do a really bad job of governing. And we've seen that, unfortunately, I think here in this case. You know, Jason Kenney is very ideologically insistent on the idea that government should not be interfering in people's lives. Government should be doing as little as possible. But when we find ourselves in a situation now where people need government to step in, support, help coordinate, help lead, then people who don't believe that's the role of government do a very bad job of leading and supporting. And so what we've seen is that we've seen them download responsibility on schools, say, well, it's not up to us. We've given schools everything they need, you know, and so they just need to figure this thing out. We saw them do the same thing with the local municipalities. You know, the mayor of the regional municipality of Wood Buffalo having to come out and say, you know, well, you know, I'm not even getting data from the government on this, on these outbreaks that are happening in my community. I'm not getting the numbers. I'm not getting cooperation. You know, the mayors of Canmore and Banff having to speak out against their own MLA, who is undermining public health restrictions and having to beg for resources and support from the provincial government. So, and again, waiting to this point of crisis before we take action, it's just, it's the worst approach to governance I could think of in many respects in the midst of a public health crisis.
It absolutely is. It's just a complete failure of leadership, right? You essentially have a premier who, rather than coming out and saying, I'm acting because this is the right thing to do, he waits until the numbers force him into a corner so he can turn around and say, oh, well, I had to do this. It wasn't my fault. Well, actually it was, right? A failure to act is just as much a choice as a decision to act is. And I am actually going to have to run because I'm 10 minutes late for something.
All good. Oh, sorry. Thank you for letting me. Okay, so we'll just wrap it there. So absolutely. So I think we're going to be watching very closely then over the next couple of weeks. We know these restrictions will be in place for at least 2 to 3 weeks. Again, another point where the premier is sort of refusing, I think, to be honest. We may be in this situation, I think, for longer, given the numbers and the crisis we're facing. But that's going to be the work we're going to be continuing to do. And I know a lot of people are going to be watching as well. So thanks, Kathleen. Appreciate you joining me to talk things through this week.
Thanks so much. It was a real pleasure.
Excellent. Well, thanks, folks, for tuning in. We'll see you next week on the next edition of The Herd.